Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Radio. My name is Tracy.
And I'm just plain Bill.
I need to get a version of that that's shorter that we can do for the bumper because it's 4.5 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
And so that's a little bit long for the lead in.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
somewhere around a minute, minute and a half is probably okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to get a better lead in for there.
Okay.
So, and I listened to a bunch of Christmas music over the last couple of days and I haven't found anything that I like better. So. You know,
well, then, my God, we'll just stick with that.
I am.
Okay.
But I did suggest that if people had suggested that they should let me know what their suggestions
okay.
are.
Cool. Come on, Twitter. Get it out there. Tell us what you like.
All right. So, let's get going. Evening, Bill. How are you?
Hey, I'm just ducky fine, by golly.
Today's
my birthday, by the way.
Happy birthday, will you?
Well, thank you.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask how old you are.
I'm 68.
December 14th. 1942. Wow.
Yeah. You know what's the most distressing part of all that?
What?
Whenever you sign up on a blog thing, it always asks you for your birth date, and so you go December, yeah, okay, there it is, da-da-boo. Then 14th, yeah, that's pretty close to the top there. And then you scroll all the way down to 1942.
Well, you know, one of the hardest things for me to pay attention to is, of course, I see lots of bankruptcy petitions, you know, paperwork for people to do.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they, you know, one of the things I have to know is what their age is because
sure.
60, people over 65 have, there's other things that have to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, what really frosts me is that, you know, I'm doing petitions for paperwork for people who were born after I graduated from high school.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Now, I'm sorry. Okay, you're 68. I'm 52. I had to think about that. 52. You know, there are times when I think about the fact that I've been an adult for more than 30 years. You know, that means that there's whole parts of my history that, you know, occurred before lots of people that are walking around today were born.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
So, you know, I just find it, you know, ageism, you know, and of course,
yeah, right.
You know that I'm going to plan to live to 137, for 52 is kind of early yet.
Well, that's true. Yeah. You're not even halfway there yet.
Yeah, not even. I'm barely out of my teens.
There you go.
In a lot of ways, I feel that way in my own head.
You know what?
I still don't think I'm as old as my parents.
I remember my grandmother, who lived to be one shy of her 100th birthday. And I remember my grandmother saying when she was, I don't know, probably in her 80s someplace. And she said, you know, it's really disconcerting when I get up in the morning and I go into the bathroom and I look in the mirror and here is this old person staring at me. I'm thinking to myself, I'm sorry, I'm only 23. Who are you?
Yeah. You know what? In my opinion, the first rule to getting old is staying young.
Yeah.
So, you know, in my head, I'm still pretty young. Got a long way to go.
All of us are.
I think there are people that I know that are old in their heads.
Yeah. I only feel that way in the morning when I'm getting out of bed.
I have a grandmother and an aunt who are neither. These are friends of the family that we, as kids, simply called grandma and aunt.
Yep.
Because they were friends of the family, and it just never changed. My Aunt Betty is still with us and is in her 80s, is 5 years older than Grandma Reed, who is not any longer with us, so she's getting a lot older. In any case, Grandma Reed is like 5 years younger than Aunt Betty. When they were both in their 60s, Aunt Betty was still doing lots of stuff, very active, you know, going out with lots of people, doing lots of stuff. Grandma Reed was sitting in front of a TV set. Both vibrant, healthy women, you know, one is dead and the other one is not. And Grandma Reed simply just stopped.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and I think that's part of the idea, you know, part of growing old is staying young. Anyways.
Yep.
I said that because, you know, I have a sister that's on a steep downward trend and a partner that's not far behind.
Yep.
So, in any case, going on, no morbidity for this Christmas season.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring up the fact that that I am now a firm believer in global warming.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was 92 degrees here, 88 degrees here on Sunday.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Matter of fact, on Facebook, I actually posted to all my friends, you know, that while I haven't had a whole lot of time to enjoy California weather, I just needed to rub it in just a little bit. 88 and sunny.
Yeah. Well, that's
everybody
okay.
That I knew was,
you know, minus. Let's see, what was it? AK Vet on Twitter said it was supposed to get down to minus 30 there in Alaska. So you average it out, and you know it's okay. It's cool.
Yeah. Well, Madison got hit with something like a foot of snow and 10 below zero wind chills.
Yep.
All I can think of is.
Yeah, exactly.
Lord. They're back there in Chicago. They've gotten snow and cold too. So, you know, in any case, I just think about the global warming. You know, Florida having helicopters fly over crops to try and keep them warm.
Or at least not freeze. Yeah. Yep.
And of course, the Cancun conference. Which basically went from start to finish with record lows the entire time they were down there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, weather is not climate.
That's exactly right.
Weather is not climate. You know, how much weather
makes up climate?
Makes up climate.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if 40% of the planet, you know, is experiencing, you know, colder and wetter, you know, winters than and summers than expected, you know, how do we determine that, you know, it's the warmest year on record?
Exactly. What is it? England is having the coldest winters in 1649. I mean, come on.
And, of course, last winter was really bad for them.
Yes, it was. Yep. This one's worse. Yep.
Ah.
It's like, yeah,
king
okay,
of,
sure. Sell me another one.
King of conspiracies that have just gone away. Peak oil. There was a report out in the last 24 hours that production of oil is down almost 40% in the United States over the, or 22% in the last 6 months. And of course, people say, "Oh, peak oil, peak oil." But of course, we all know that it's in fact a moratorium on drilling that is causing the problem.
Well, you know,
so peak oil is being caused by regulation, not
peak,
by any particular losses.
Peak oil can occur anytime you don't drill for it, folks. I'm sorry, you know, it's just kind of that's the way it goes. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard there was a drought in the Sahara Desert.
Really?
Yeah, I can't understand why.
Yeah,
you know, and the third contradiction, I don't know if you saw, well, I'm certain you saw it because you have a tendency to watch investments, but apparently the bond markets just around all over the planet have been awash in blood for the last 3 days.
Gee, think of that.
Now, for people that don't understand the relationship, when prices of bonds crash, then
yields go
up.
Yeah.
And here's the interesting thing. A big move in the bond market is 5 or 6 basis points.
Yeah. That's like 5 or 6 tenths of a percent, folks.
Right. 5 or 6, you know, it's pretty small. We're talking about 30 basis points.
Ouch.
In the last.
Ouch.
Some markets. Mm. And the spreads are rather interesting because it's not just the short term can't go anywhere because it's locked to the Fed, and the Fed has basically said zero.
Mm-hmm.
But the long terms, the one thing that Bernanke wanted to get down, and specifically said QE2 was designed to do, was to get the long term rates down, are the
mm-hmm.
ones moving hardest and fastest
mm-hmm.
higher.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
So what we have here is that nature is telling us that science is bunk.
Yeah.
We have, the world going opposite directions to where government wants it to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And somehow, according to most of the people on the left, Sarah Palin's to blame.
Yep. Also, it's kind of like, okay, take that, peons. We're just going to wipe out everything you've got. Thank you very much. Yep. That's fine. Folks, if you aren't cash, you ain't anywhere. I'm sorry.
Well, as most people know, the type of business I'm in is bankruptcy, and December is historically a slow month for us. People hang on to their credit while they deal with the Christmas shopping and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people don't bankruptcy. Between Thanksgiving and the first of the year, it's usually a pretty quiet time in the bankruptcy business.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
Not this month.
At least not so far, huh? And we're almost halfway through there.
I'm going to have more files to do this month than I have in the last 6.
Ouch. People just couldn't hold on any longer.
Which is good for me.
Well, yeah.
I've had 4 attorneys contact me in the last 10 days.
Ow.
Looking for additional help.
Ow. Not good.
So,
yep.
As an indicator, frankly, people, my business is below the wire. The business world, the general political world, doesn't see what's going on in my world until months and months after the fact.
Mm. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That makes sense. We see it happening, on the ground as it's literally as it's happening.
Sure.
And things are just getting. And I am seeing everything from lower middle class, $30,000, $40,000 a year incomes to 100 plus, 100. I did one today for $105,000 income, and another one on Wednesday for just under $160,000 year income. So income is not protecting people at this point.
No, it isn't.
That's
what happens when you live beyond your means, folks.
Well, you know, do you know who Elizabeth Warren is? Her name may be familiar to you.
It is. How come?
She is going to be in charge of the FTC's programs that deal with credit management.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Remember exactly what she's going to be doing. Anyways, she was a pretty big advocate against the Bankruptcy Reform Act back in 2005 when I spent some time emailing back and forth with her, mainly because we were fairly active in that process too. And one of the things that I told her, I said, you know, based on my experience and what I was doing and our practice, our argument that as many as 30 or 40 or 50% of bankruptcies were medically induced, medical debt induced, was extremely far out and couldn't be supported by any stretch of the imagination. Maybe somewhere between 5 and 8% of bankruptcies are medical debt induced. Now, the argument that they used was as much as 50% of bankruptcies had significant medical debt. By significant, it meant more than, you know, up to or equal to the annual income of the person, which is a large amount of debt. But generally speaking, we're only talking about somewhere between 8 and 10% of the total debt of the people that were filing. So while the medical debt was pretty significant, it was not the overriding factor that drove people into bankruptcy. That hasn't changed, and somebody that last week that I was talking about bankruptcy, they said, well, look at how many, you know, now that Obamacare is in there, we're going to have much less people filing bankruptcy, you know, because of medical debt. And I laughed. We're going to have a lot more people filing bankruptcy because of medical debt, in my opinion. Obamacare does absolutely nothing to stop.
No.
The cost spirals. In a lot of cases, it's going to cause it to go up much higher. And even if medical bankruptcies were decreased by 50%, given how many bankruptcies are actually occurring, it's not even a significant change in how many bankruptcies are going to be going on.
Wow.
And there's no way it's going to reduce it by 50%. So I'm just looking at, you know, the list of files that I have here to work on and go, you know, this is crazy. This is absolutely crazy.
Yep.
My business is going to take off next year in a way that's just going to be amazing. I can already see it. It's going to be a horrifying year for the economy. Of course, you and I have been saying this for the better part of a year.
Yes, we have. Yep.
We've been saying the shoe's going to drop, the shoe's going to drop, the shoe's going to drop, and I said to say, you know, to other people, you know, realistically speaking, I'm looking at a dog that wants to.
I was just
going to
say, boy, that was a very timely sound effect. If you timed that, that was good.
Let's see, I completely lost the train of thought. I knew that was going to happen, so I tried to hang on.
Oh, God. Yeah.
No, it's bankruptcies are not medical driven. We're going to have a lot more problems doing other things. Now, for all of you people, here's some sound effects. Now the dog's tail is wagging. You can't hear that.
Yeah, no.
But you can hear all the rest of it. I don't need any more sound effects.
No.
No, I don't know where I went.
No,
I don't know where I was going.
Okay.
Anyways, let's go on to other stuff. You know, the idea that the government is driving more people into bankruptcy. That's
yes,
all I have to basically say about that.
Yep.
Is that the next year is going to be Obama bankruptcies, left, right, center, up, down, backwards, forwards. It's just not going to be pretty for people.
No.
That's kind of where I was going.
Okay.
The idea that, you know, we've been calling for it to happen for a year, and I said it to somebody, this economy can continue to do positive things, you know, for a long time after you knock the supports out of it. It's
sure.
just so big.
Yeah.
There are so many places where momentum can pull it that it can go on for much longer than we expect. And in the context of the conversation, it was, you know, the American dollar is going to lose its value and, you know, the rest of the planet's going to abandon the dollar. I'm like, you know, if they haven't abandoned the dollar yet, they're not going to do it anytime soon. And tell me, what country has a currency that is even remotely strong enough to replace it? There's not even a basket of currencies at this point that come close to being able to replace it. So, unfortunately, and I say that exactly that way, unfortunately, in a lot of ways, our economy is going to continue to be stronger than anybody else on the planet. And I say that unfortunately because what we really need to do is have a good old-fashioned, you know, government reset.
Oh, yeah.
But we've been talking
about
that for a couple of years, and it's still going to be out there.
Yep.
Retail sales were up 0.8% in November. I haven't seen the inflation numbers to find out, you know, how much of that was driven by prices. I'm going to suggest not much. I've seen lots of cost-cutting all over the place. What little shopping that I have done for the Christmas season suggests that prices are really weird.
Really?
When something is expensive, it's really expensive. When something's really expensive, it's going really cheap. And by that I mean, if you want to buy a bunch of $10 presents, most of them are selling for $20 right now.
Hmm.
If you want to buy a couple of $300 or $400 presents, they're selling for $200.
Huh.
The expensive stuff is selling for way cheaper than you would expect, and the cheap stuff is selling for higher than you would expect. You know, that kind of, you know, I couldn't find any CDs or DVDs on sale in the last 10 days.
Really?
I went looking for music and for videos, and music was, you know, all in around $10. Videos were all in around $20. You know, I could get a title here or something like that for cheaper and stuff like that, but as a general rule, the amount of sale items on that, nothing. But if I want to get a big screen TV, you know, I can get a 42-inch LCD for under $500 at this point.
Wow.
You know, if I'm willing to, you know, do a little bit of shopping for it.
Right.
That's just crazy.
Huh. Well, what do you see on the parking lots? Full parking lots? Empty? Yeah, full?
Other than Black Friday and that weekend, I'm not seeing anything. I mean, I'm seeing busy. But I'm not seeing anything dramatic. Certainly nothing like Black Friday.
Yeah, right.
You know, because I drive by two pretty good sized malls now every day going to and from, and I do it, you know, around 9-10 o'clock in the morning, and I do it again around 5-6 o'clock in the evening. So I go down there and pass them between 9 and 9:30 in the morning, and I come back between 12 and 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I go back down between 5 and 6, and then the last one doesn't make anything. So I'm seeing it at three different times over the course of the day, and I'm telling you I'm not seeing it being very busy. I mean, they're busy, but nothing that I would expect, you know, for a busy shopping season.
Huh. You know, I don't know. I don't actually remember. It might have been Hippie Chick, but somebody on Twitter said today that La Jolla – hopefully down in your neck of the woods, was just busier than anything. Now, I don't know if that was the time they hit it or, you know, whatever, but that's kind of
I'm seeing, I was in Walmart Thursday.
Uh-huh.
And I saw a lot of carts with big TVs in it and lots of carts with lots of little things in it.
Huh. Okay.
All of it, obviously, gift stuff.
Yeah, sure.
But I, what I wasn't seeing was a lot of carts with a lot of stuff and big stuff in it.
Ah,
you know,
okay.
Somebody was buying a couple big things or somebody was buying a lot of little things.
Yep. Yep.
I don't know. And of course, this is one little section of the world. San Diego is not doing that bad as relative to the rest of the state or the country. And of course, we don't have weather to contend with. They're going to argue over the next sometime in January that this blizzard, had a negative impact on retail sales in December. It's going to be one of the excuses that they use to suggest that retail sales are going to go off simply because of the size of this. I know it's getting into the east at this point. The Midwest is still trying to dig its way out.
Sure.
Nobody in my family is out shopping this weekend or even into this week because they're dealing with the cold now too. So.
Huh. Arkansas Traveler just chimed in. He said that he's here in China is buying a lot of raw material resources, copper mining properties, rod, etc.
Well, that's
which
rather interesting.
Yeah,
while they might be buying the resources, they're not buying the commodities. I wonder what's going on there.
They're not buying copper directly. They're buying the producing mines. Is that what you're saying, or what?
I would suggest that AT, if that's what you're suggesting, I think that is probably right. They are probably buying assets, not materials, because right now, China is sitting on a real estate bubble, the likes of which this country has never seen.
True. Yeah. Exactly.
When the Chinese real estate bubble breaks, and it is going to break.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Kind of reminds me of when Japan was buying all of those resources. They bought, Pebble Beach. They bought film studios. They bought New York properties. I mean, they just bought a ton of stuff. And then all the prices.
5-10 years
died.
Later, they had to sell it.
Yeah, at distressed prices.
Yeah, big losses.
Yep.
Yeah, I have a sneaking suspicion that China is going to be in the same boat if they're buying lots of commodity-producing fields and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they're buying shale. Who's letting them buy shale oil fields around here?
Well, that Buzz Zero just said that they've been
buying. They can buy them, but they're not going to be able to do with them because Obama's not going to let them, and the environmentalists are not going to let them deal with it.
Well, now stop and think about that for a second. Maybe the environmentalists, but Obama? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they hold a whole lot of our debt.
Well, I have this to say. And this worries me a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
I call it a conspiracy theory. But
I'm up for conspiracy theories. Go ahead.
A missile was launched off the coast of Southern California.
Yeah. A month or so ago. Yeah.
There is zero doubt that that's what was launched. Zero.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, that's true.
Any argument, it was a contrail. Contrails don't move away from you going up. They move away from you going down.
Yeah.
Because they get closer to the horizon. you know, contrails also don't start at the ground.
That's true.
Contrails are you know, high altitude phenomenons. They are not low altitude phenomenons under any circumstances. And this wasn't a little model rocket. This is something that went, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of feet into the air. This was not a little model rocket that went up
1,000 feet
or 2,000 feet.
Yep.
This was seen from, 20, 30, 40 miles away. You don't see that from little things. This is a missile that was launched off our shore. Now, our Navy has said it absolutely was not one of our missiles.
Yep.
And, whose is it? There are four players with submarine-launched missile capability. Israel, Russia, us, China. Anybody that I'm missing?
Don't think so. England, maybe, but I'm not sure.
England and France both have capabilities of having submarine-launched missiles.
Mm-hmm.
So the question would be, who would have an interest in launching a missile off of our shore? France? No. England? No.
Nah. Israel? Probably not.
And so I'm sitting here going, the idea, one missile isn't going to cause any significant damage. Unless it's used in a very specific way. One missile launched at LA, let's pretend it's one of our intercontinental ballistics, 24 MIRVs, on it.
Mm-hmm.
That could do a significant amount of damage to Southern California. One of those could do a significant amount of damage to Southern California.
Yep.
A significant damage to Chicago or New York or Washington, D.C., but one missile can't do very much there. However, one moderately yielded warhead, 20 megatons, is all you need, which is only a little bit bigger than one of the MIRVs, which yield between 5 and 7. 20 launched to about 120,000 feet and then detonated there.
Oh, an EMP? Yeah.
Would wipe out California, Arizona, Utah, Nevada, and it may get as far as New Mexico, depending on exactly where it went off. One would take out the Southwest. One could take out the Northwest. One in the right place could take, the Southern Plains. You could take 8 or 9 states out if you launched one missile and it had the right altitude, the right placement. And I just find that this has blown over so fast. So fast.
Mm-hmm.
That I worry about it.
Yep.
China's not stupid. I don't think China would ever do that. They have too much to lose by causing that kind of disruption in our economy. However, they could certainly threaten it. And that threat, especially if you got a wimpy little glass-jawed, empty suit sitting in the White House, could actually result in some pretty significant damage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I'm worried about stuff like that. China may want to, if their real estate bubble explodes and gets really, really bad, may need to do some distraction. And that would be a pretty good distraction.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much distraction they need to do. I mean, they've got a pretty tight control.
People do the strangest things.
Well, they do. I wouldn't argue with that. Not a bit.
Speaking of the things.
Mm-hmm.
Last Thursday, I suggested to somebody that Obama was done. The Grand Compromise was an idiot's play. and that Obama was basically a lame duck president, a lame duck administration.
Mm-hmm.
And he may as well just go play golf and take Michelle shopping around the planet. Because, you know, he's pretty much done. And I was, you know, told that's crazy. Until Friday afternoon. when the throne was abdicated.
Yeah. Very good.
I won Mr. Obama, apparently to go to assuage his wife, who was apparently sitting somewhere on the side, you know, pointing at her watch, going, tapping her toe, going, you might be the leader of the free world, but if you don't get your ass over here right now, I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah.
And the president of the United States, leader of the free world, went, sorry, gotta go, bye! And he left. Leaving, you know, Bill Clinton in charge. I don't get it. Frankly, myself, I looked at that and went, okay, you know, if I had sold somebody on the, you know, tried to sell somebody on an idea, let's have a reality show in which ex-presidents, okay, vie for the chance to take over the presidential podium for just one more hour. You know, people would look at me like I was crazy.
Jeez. You know, actually, that's a
good idea.
Nobody
would buy that. Are you crazy?
That's a great idea. I mean, think of the TV revenues that would come in. I mean, it's kind of like a reality show, right?
Now, that's what I said. It's a reality show. You know,
yeah.
We could have George Bush Senior and Junior competing against, you know, Carter and Clinton for, you know, Republicans versus Democrats to see who gets into the podium for
hour. Kind of like The Price is Right.
Well, no, I was thinking like, you know, we could have a closest to the pin competition. You know,
golf. Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We could have a sloop race. You know, off the Cape Cod.
Right there in those in that wind farm thing off there, right?
We could have you know, who can appear with the most dictators in a 24-hour period.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
We could have how many times you can use terrorist and Israel in the same sentence competition.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, we could probably extend it for, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, we might get 3 or 4 weeks out of it.
Maybe even a half a season. Could do it.
So, I frankly, a president of the United States looking at his watch and then saying, here, you keep going and walking.
Yeah, right. That is so bizarre. That is so bizarre.
Sorry. God. Sorry, this man is such an empty suit. He is in. This is not even over his head at this point. This is like not even in the game.
Did you see Carter's statement here the other day? Said his only failure was in not getting reelected. That just happened in the last couple of days.
Well, that's like Brett Favre saying the only thing I screwed up was my shoulder.
Yeah, right.
You know, Carter's an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, and I apologize to everybody on the planet.
To all the idiots on the planet. There you go.
I apologize to... No, I. You know, 1976 was my first presidential vote. And I cast it for Carter. I apologize. I was 18. That was stupid.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, how smart could I be at 18, right?
Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't know it. And then I went into the military the next year, and by 1980, I had gone, idiot! Idiot! And then I was talking about Carter, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just sitting there like going, you know, So, you know, if we're going to raise the age of consent, we're going to raise the age, you know, I think we should raise the voting age to about 35, maybe 40.
That'd be okay.
Maybe 40.
Yeah.
We were talking, who was I talking to? I was talking to somebody about it. I hate to pick on you boys. I really do. But I said, this is something that I said to somebody a long time ago. Boys become men the day they quit trying.
Ah, very good. Yep, yep.
Obama hasn't quit yet.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, girls become women the first time they have a child. There's some really significant qualifiers there. Because I know some girls that have had multiple children, and they are, oh, man, they're not anywhere near ready to be an adult.
Yeah.
Anyways, I've been talking to CJ about it. It is my belief that the average person becomes an adult sometime in their late 20s, and the process that it happens is called continuity of thought. It means your memory can relate to the entire day as a sequence. You know, you did this, you did this, 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 then this, then this, then this. Whereas before that, it's simply event-driven. Yesterday, I went to the mall. What time? I don't know. What did you do before? I don't know. What did you do after? I don't know. You know, ask a 25-year-old, you know, what they did when they went to the mall before and after, and they won't be able to do it. Ask a 30-year-old what they did before or after the mall, and they'll be able to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean by continuity of thought. You can remember a continuous train of thinking. And that's where I consider to be adulthood. But there are a lot of people that don't ever have that. It's just this disjointed thinking process. And frankly, most liberals are like this. Victoria and I have had multiple conversations about it. This idea that, you know, everything is feelings-based. You got to do everything by what you feel. The hell with consequences. And, you know, you look at, you know, the Grand Compromise and this omnibus, this ominous spending bill. And,
oh, yeah.
And both of them are this disjointed, you know, offerings by Congress, by the president, by the administration, by Washington, D.C., where there's no continuity of thought. Come on, people. There's just, you know, events. We have to solve this. We have to solve this. We have to solve this. You know, there's no looking at, you know, the problem. And in conversations with somebody else over the weekend, I said, one of the things that I'm really good at is problem solving. Now, there's lots of people in the world that are problem solvers. But it's not the solving of the problem that I'm really good at. It's defining what the problem is. And when somebody walks into a room and there's water all over the floor, the problem is not the water all over the floor. The problem is not the sink that's overflowing.
Exactly.
Because why is there water in the sink overflowing to begin with? So it's an acknowledgement of what the problem is. And, of course, we've been having in the last 2.5 years a really big problem with defining what the problem is. We have a government and a Federal Reserve that is trying to increase liquidity when the problem is solvency. You and I have said this, I don't know how many times on this show in the last 2 years, 2.5 years. You know, the problem is not, you know, liquidity. The problem is insolvency. Our problem is not spending or lack of revenue. Our problem is spending.
Yep. And so what do we get for that? Gee, oh, gosh, how about a $1.1 trillion, what was it, continuing resolution?
Yeah, they're certainly not going to do a budget.
Oh, no. Well, they're going to try. Well, actually, yeah, no. They aren't going to do a budget. They're going to try to do a
continuing resolution
to go through September, I think, which takes any kind of an ability for the House to do a budget away from them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we get $1.1 trillion increased spending that doesn't solve any problems, and we can't do a budget until September. I mean, I'm sorry, that just doesn't make any sense at all. But so much of our government doesn't. And, you know, I'm hopeful that the Republicans will filibuster that and let Harry Reid go to January the 5th if he wants to.
I'm not convinced that, you know, somebody's talking about the idea that the pledge with America is already being violated. I paid no attention to the pledge, frankly.
Nah. Nope.
When it was posted. I thought it was a bunch of bullshit, you know, attempt to regain some luster from 94.
Yeah.
And it was another issue because people didn't understand what the problem was.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Realistically speaking, it's not, the problem is not Barack Obama. I hate to say
no.
It to people.
No. I mean, it's partly his in that he abdicated his leadership, left it to Pelosi and Reid, and Pelosi and Reid decided that they were going to lard everything up. Now, that the part where he abdicates his leadership, yes, that is his fault. But the legislation that came out of that isn't, strictly speaking, his fault. It's the leadership of the Dems in Congress, who had a filibuster-proof and supermajority in both chambers. So if anything ever pointed to divided government, that certainly did. What did we get for that? Well, you got the health care bill, all 2,000-some-odd pages of it. And so you have an almost 2,000-page, at almost the same time of year, for this stupid $1.1 trillion in further spending. Makes no sense.
Our problem is not Barack Obama. Our problem is the entire concept of Congress thinking that government is the solution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Government,
frankly, the problem is about 70% of the population of the United States that agrees with them.
Yeah. To paraphrase a great president, Ronald Reagan, government is the problem. It's not the solution.
So that's one of the things that I've looked at over the last couple weeks, because things have gone on in my life, you know, recently where, I really need to find out what the problem is. Before I can do anything, I really need to find out what the problem is.
Absolutely.
And digging through all of the characteristics of the situation does not tell me anything. You know, I need to get deeper under there. And that's the problem we have right now. I don't think we have any problem solvers in D.C. I don't think we have any... in the GOP, we may not have any.
Mm-hmm.
Let me talk about Paul Ryan for a moment.
Okay.
There's lots of people thinking that Paul Ryan's just this great limited government, you know, congressman that's going to do wonders for conservative movement in Congress. And I'm telling you, if you paid any attention to Paul Ryan's medical replacement for Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
There was literally, as far as the structure is concerned of Paul Ryan's proposal, no difference.
Mm-mm. Yep, you know, I agree.
The size, the scope, the aspects, you know, were all there. Paul Ryan's was, let me offer you a you know, a GOP version of socialism.
Yeah, exactly. Here's socialism light. You'll like this much better.
You know, I looked at Paul Einstein and I went, this is trying to make Obamacare palatable. This is pretending we're going to produce, you know, socialized medicine without an individual mandate.
Exactly.
And in almost most regards, that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I'm impressed by Paul Ryan in a lot of ways, but as a conservative, limited government, constitutional-oriented congressman,
nope.
He's not it.
Nope. He isn't.
Now, you know, is Pence or Thune that way? I don't know. Thune has already came out, as far as I heard today, he's come out for the Grand Compromise. That makes me question his bona fides. I don't know him that well, so I can't speak to it. Somebody asked me to comment on whether Thune was a conservative or not, and I said I didn't know him that well to be able to make a comment. But the fact
right.
that he's come out for the Grand Compromise certainly puts the question into my hat.
Yep.
You know, about
absolutely.
Whether he is or isn't. Pence talks a really good game. What happens when he's in a leadership role and he actually has some power? I'm not convinced.
Yeah. Well, I suppose we're going to find that out in this upcoming Congress in the 111th.
You and I are of the same mind as far as this Congress is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
The American Conservative Party is going to get lots of members starting in May or June.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. To shift the subject slightly, but not all that slightly, as we're still dealing with constitutional things, did you happen to catch Justice Stephen Breyer's comments?
I read something on Breyer's comments and an analysis on those comments. And bear with me. It was probably Saturday morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, when I went when I saw them. Sunday morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. One of those mornings when I was out hospital really late and came back and didn't. I was too wired to go to sleep, but too tired to do much.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it. So refresh me.
Well, basically his two comments that struck me, actually right between the eyes, was one. His comment about, and it was regarding the Second Amendment, that, the Second Amendment certainly allowed for the possibility of restriction of firearms because Madison had to get his Constitution adopted.
That's it.
And so, therefore, he simply put that in so that he could get it adopted, and it didn't really mean anything, so therefore, we can ignore it.
Right. It was along the general impression, and this is a mistake a lot of people have done, and I've read pretty extensively on Madison. You know, he was opposed to the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
Not because he was opposed to rights, by any stretch of the imagination. He was just afraid that somebody was going to take a Bill of Rights and start saying, well, if it's not in the Bill of Rights, then we don't have it.
Exactly.
And, of course, he was poo-pooed a whole lot and then realized too many people believed that unless they were listed, there was going to be no stopping Congress because it could just run its head over there. And he realized after the Virginia conference that he really had no choice, that if the Constitution was going to be passed, they were going to have to put the Bill of Rights in there.
Yep.
And he's, you know, an enormous amount of time trying to get the Bill of Rights passed in the House so that, in fact, he could get the Constitution approved.
Breyer's reading
of what was going on there in Madison's head completely ignores virtually everything that I have read that Madison wrote about the rights. I mean, he was of the mind that, you know, the government had no authority to infringe on individual rights of any kind, in any shape, in any form.
And that it was adequately spelled out in the Constitution.
Right,
yeah.
That it was that the Constitution had nothing to do with individuals. It was a federation of states, and the Constitution was designed you know, to manage that federation of states.
Exactly.
Nothing to do with individuals. And any idea that the Constitution had to do with individuals, you know, certainly made, you know, made the whole situation confusing.
Yep.
You know, that was Madison's point. You know, this is a Constitution that deals with the federation of states. It has nothing to do with individuals. Now you're going to bring in a whole bunch of amendments that deal with individuals. You know, this is not a place where the government's supposed to be belong, is going to be allowed to go to anyways. Why confuse the situation? Why muddy the water? And then realize that, you know, nobody was going to let the Constitution be done unless, you know, it absolutely protected, you know. And if you read the Bill of Rights, virtually anything that government at the time could do against the individual is in the Bill of Rights.
Exactly. Exactly. The second thing that he said that also struck me between the eyes is, apparently, our rights are geographically bound. He says, if you don't like D.C. gun laws, take a bus ride to Maryland. You can shoot there. And I thought, well, gosh, isn't that interesting? Let's see. If I live in Berkeley and I want to exercise my First Amendment freedoms, maybe I have to take a bus ride to Concord or even Arizona. And how about if I want an abortion, maybe I have to take a bus ride to Kansas? Or, I mean, you can go all kinds of places to say, well, gosh, maybe you ought to take a bus ride. And here all this time I was laboring under the misapprehension that, gosh, my rights traveled with me, regardless of where I was. Apparently, that's not the case.
Oh, when government gives you the rights, then government can control how they are done.
Apparently.
You know, and, you know that it's just, it is, you know, the fact that he's, you know, a justice on the Supreme Court of the United States, you know, is frightening enough as it is. But the problem is, you know, again, we got 60% of the population that agrees with him, at least on part.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, that the Constitution grants us any rights at all.
Yeah.
The Constitution does not grant a single right.
Nope. Nope.
It was one of the ones that I wrote a comment on it. I think it's the Sixth Amendment. Let me see. Do we have time? Do we have time? 2 minutes. Probably not.
Okay.
Now, say goodbyes. Let me see if I can find this really quick.
Okay. Okay. Bus Zero, Just Me, Pammy, Mama Gurkha, Hallie 5, Louisa Mom. If you were listening, and some of you were, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And we'll be talking to you next week. And, hey, by the way, Bus Zero, thanks for the that thing about China's CNOOC buying 33% stake in Chesapeake Seagull Ford Shale. That's interesting, and I'm going to peruse that a little bit more in depth there.
Well, I can't find it right offhand, but basically along the lines, the whole idea is that, you know, it basically says Americans can enjoy a right. And I said, see, doesn't that present a right? And I went, there's a whole lot of difference between somebody enjoying a beer and somebody being given a beer.
Yes, 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 yes. It's one thing for me to walk into a bar and buy my own beer. It's another one having to walk into the bar and ask somebody if they would buy me one.
So, you know, if you have the beer, you can enjoy it.
Yes.
You have to wait for somebody to give it to you, then it's entirely different. In any case, you know, people, if you think the Constitution gives you any rights at all, you're crazy.
Yep.
Unfortunately, there's a whole lot of conservative people, Tea Party people, GOP people and Democratic people that actually believe that, and they are flat out wrong.
Yep.
William.
Thank you.
40 seconds.
Okay.
I leave you with this.
Yep.
Going into the green room on the backside for those that are going to listen to the podcast. We'll talk to you next week.
So as he flew back over
wish I could fade that out.
Yeah, no way to do that, though, on that. Yeah.
Fade that out. Anyway, so I'm going to be running up to the hospital real quick here.
Okay.
In the meantime, my general opinion is that that next week the GOP is going to piss everybody else off and hope that over the Christmas holidays that people will forget enough to forgive them by come January 5th.
Good luck.
And, you know, what the Republicans should do right now is just get up and leave.
Yeah, all of them.
All of them.
Yep.
House,
yep.
Senate, just say, see you after the New Year's, bye,
yep.
And just and leave.
Yep. Can't do anything in the House anyway, don't have the numbers. But the Senate, it's going to take 60 to get anything passed. And as long as you got 42 senators that all walk out, it don't work.
So, that's my opinion at this particular point in time, is that the only way the GOP can save itself right now from snatching, victory from the jaws of defeat is to get the hell out of Dodge.
Yep.
Because I firmly believe that, you know, last week we said it. You know, they had Obama in an untenable position, and I think what they're going to do is they're going to turn their backs and let him walk out. And they're going to let him go. And frankly, this is the time when you really need to kick somebody when they're down.
Absolutely, you betcha. At this point, it in fact is war, and you need to treat it as such. And unfortunately, I don't think the GOP is.
Right. I don't quote Rush very often, but if we want him to fail, then we actually have to want him to fail.
Yeah, exactly. not stumble, not get a boo-boo, but actually fail.
Yeah,
and
you know.
So far they haven't.
The last thing I want to hear is the GOP going, "Don't worry, Mr. President, we got your back."
Exactly. Yep. Don't need that. Not a bit.
All right.
Okay, kiddo. So,
we're
you're going
have
up
a good
to the
week?
Hospital?
Huh?
You're going up to the hospital?
I am.
All right. Super.
I'm creating mass hysteria up there.
Uh-oh. Good for you.
A lot of times when I'm talking to people in the hospital, I point to Victoria and go, "Royal." And then I point to me, "Pain in the ass."
Yeah, right. hopefully they get it.
Unfortunately, not well enough. And, the nursing staff does, but the doctors, not enough.
Not enough. Yep.
I'm going to go up there and raise hell again tonight. So,
okay.
In the meantime, William, everybody okay there? YouTube okay?
Everybody's okay here. We're just keeping on.
All right. Have a good week, everybody. We'll
you
talk
too.
Next Tuesday. And hopefully we'll be able to say, that the GOP has stuck to their guns.
Hopefully.
Otherwise, we might be pointing them at them.
There you go. Okay.
Good night, everybody.
Super. Night, Trace. Bye.